Colloquium, Monday, April 5th, 1983, with guest Richard Brestoft, from theater school to camera ready.
This is too formal for me. Going. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate your interest. This is a real thrill for me. I'd like to thank Barry Witham for the invitation, and Scott Hatzo for putting it all together and actually getting me here to the parking lot. I graduated in 1975 from NYU after a three-year training program in acting with my Master of Fine Arts degree, thinking I was, in fact, a Master of Fine Arts. So, for some reason, I was hired fairly soon after that in high school. During the bicentennial of 1976, none of you were born. How many were born by 1976? Thank God, okay, we can talk. So, they did a bunch of television programming during the bicentennial that had to do with events of American revolutionary history. And I was hired, for reasons, again, that are not understandable, to play General Lafayette with this horrifying French dialect that I do, which is based on Maurice Chevalier. It sounds like this is bullshit. It's like this. I don't know anything French. I never studied French. But they hired me to play this part. Pardon my language. You'll hear a lot of it. So I got hired to do this part and went out to the set. Well, this was the first media job I'd ever had in my life. I'd been on stage all my life, from college through graduate school, and then I was working at the Public Theater for Joe Papp. So I got on the set, and I was ready to go. I had a big scene in Lafayette that day. I don't remember what it was. And we shot it, and I went back to my trailer. They call it a trailer. I guess it's part of the trailer, but what these things really are, the little tiny, tiny honey wagons, they call them. They barely turn around. There's a little bathroom here, like this. That's it. I was in my trailer, changed my clothes, because I've done my work for the day. Knock on the door. We're ready for you. I said, ready for what? Is this Richard Brestoft? Yes. We're ready for you on the set. I said, I'm going home. And the fellow said, would you open the door, please? I said, yes. He said, why are you in your street clothes? I said, well, I'm leaving. What do you mean you're leaving? I thought, I'm leaving. We shot what it says here. We're supposed to shoot scene 20. We shot scene 20. I'm going home. He said, can I come in for a second? I said, yeah. He said, I don't have time to explain to you the entire history of filmmaking how it is that we do this, but I would like to tell you that, can I sit down? I said, yeah. He said, while I'm sitting down, would you change back into your costume, your Lafayette costume? I said, how'd you get back into that? Yeah. Why? See, that was the master. We just shot the master. I said, yeah, so what's a master? I kind of New York attitude at that time. Yeah, so what's a master? What was a master? Well, the master is just the first shot. It's the furthest away from the actors. Now we do coverage the rest of the day. I said, what's that? He said, okay, Richard, they're ready for the two shot. I said, what's a two shot? He said, I don't have time to tell you. You're going to find out today all about this. Now, I thought, oh my God, I have to do it again? He said, yeah, you have to do it again. Yeah, you have to do it over and over all day, and we're going to shoot it from different angles. Then we cut it together, and it all looks like one piece of film, all one piece of acting. I said, oh. Now, I don't know if any of you are this dumb, but that's how dumb I was. And yet, I was a master of fine arts. I got back on the set, and I was very thrown. Now, I had put everything into this. It turned out to be the master. It was the furthest away. I didn't know it at all. Yeah, I think it showed a sort of a cauldron we were talking over and something. And all you can see is sort of a little part of my head. I had given all my emotional, my great speech in French, whatever it was, and I was spent. We were there the rest of the day shooting two shots, close-ups, over the shoulders, very special types of angles that were involved. And I was in a daze. I was completely unprepared for this by my master of fine arts degree, and shocked out of my mind. So I wondered, but nonetheless, my great training and talent will have shown through. And when this is cut together and we all watch it, why, the magic of the screen will be incredible. Some months later, there was a special screening at a theater in New York. And I had not been cast by the casting director. In fact, somehow I had gotten past the casting director. I don't remember how I did this. I'd love to remember. And gotten right into the producer's office. And they had hired me. And she had said to me, I really want to see you in this, because she turned out to have been one of the two most powerful casting directors in New York. And said, I really want to see you in this, because you're the only one that got a part in this project without my seeing you. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this. And it was a big screen, big, not one of these, but I mean, you know, a big movie screen. And we were in a big theater, and she was happy to be sitting directly in front. So this thing came on, and I had a high back collar, you know, those French things. The first thing I see of myself is my head, is like this. And the collar was like this. I looked absolutely ridiculous. And watching this, I guess it was the worst performance I've ever turned in my life. And when it was over, everyone was pretty quiet. The casting director turned around and looked at me like this. What's your name again? I didn't tell her. I burst out of the room crying. And I was heading for the East River, I swear to God, not far away. And I thought, well, that's it. And that, now that's going on television nationally and everything, and everyone's going to get to see a fabulous performance. I knew it was bad, real bad. I call them cringers. That was a 100 cringer. I had 100 times like, oh. And I thought, well, geez, I wish I'd been prepared for this. I got to the East River and I thought, well, I need to throw myself in, or I have to admit to myself that I have a lot to learn still, and I may be a master of fine arts, but it doesn't mean that I know everything. And I had a real slap in the face, so I looked at the East River and it was very dirty and cold, and I thought, well, I'll just admit that I have a lot to learn. I won't jump in, and I'll try to learn stuff. So the last 17 years or so, I've been trying to figure this out. And it's been darn interesting, and I still don't know that much about it, but I have gotten slightly better. I'm down now to 75 cringes per performance. So that's my sort of personal story of my own embarrassment. And one of the reasons that I've been interested in teaching is so that other people don't have to go through that experience that I went through. Be completely well, of course, it went out over the air nationally, and I told my mother that it was on the day after that it was actually on. So she missed it, and everyone I knew, I misled them. Some people did see it, and in fact, I was not called by some people. In fact, that casting director I never heard before, and I don't blame her. That piece of film, I hope, has been destroyed. If not, it is one of my goals in life to find it and burn all copies that exist. Horrifying thing. So that we have some time for questions and answers and stuff, we're going to get to the meat of this. in doing this research, trying to find out what all this is about and cameras and things, I found out a number of bizarre and peculiar things that aren't talked about at all to actors, and I thought I would just give you a little taste or clue you in to some of the things that happen. You have your body and you have your voice, and think that they go together. And you would think that what you did is what you wind up seeing. But after principal photography is completed, which is to say your scenes are shot and the entire thing has been shot, they go into what's called the post-production phase. And in post-production, for those of you that are writers, those of you that are directors, those of you that want to be actors, you need to know that in post-production, after a movie has been written, after it has been shot, after you've done your acting, the writing is, there are rewrites that actually take place filmically. There is redirection that takes place in post-production, and there is new acting that takes place that you never did in post-production. With today's digital tools, the first thing they do is split your voice off from your body. Sound editors split all dialogue off. Every character has their own track of dialogue, separate from the picture, which is why, in a close-up, if we have a scene together and the shot is on me, they'll say to you, a director will say, no overlaps in the scene. Meaning, if we're talking and she has to interrupt me by saying something like,
time to stop talking now.
I have to stop. I have to make sure I stop. Because if there's an overlap, I'm not talking, right, we talk at the same time. They can't split our two tracks off. They're now married to each other on one track. What do they do with these tracks? Well, they can do almost anything. They can shorten the timing of your line, however you were doing it. They can lengthen the time of your line. They can deepen your voice. They can pinch your voice up, change its speed, tempo, everything. Can be manipulated. Your body. Now, you think, well, what can they do to that? Well, there is a secret thing called a Cytex machine. This is technology and the actor, I suppose. A Cytex machine, which is a secret. And it is a Madison Avenue device, really, and it's used with models. And models don't know it's used. And it is a very sophisticated computer graphics device that stretches legs, narrows thighs, pouts lips, changes colors of eyes. Models don't know. And a lot of times, they'll look at themselves in magazines and try and say, God, I looked great that day. If I just diet a little bit more and I don't eat that piece of lettuce I was going to have for my meal today, I could look like that again. What? They can never look like that because the Cytex machine has manipulated their body. This is now coming to the moving picture, not just the still picture. So that's part of our future. If producers don't like a scene, and they want it rewritten, and it's already been shot, how do you rewrite after something's already been shot? Well, I have an example. I have a bunch of examples here. The first one is kind of a humorous one. I can do many things as an actor. We all can, aren't we? We're so talented. This is something that I cannot do. We're about to see. It's not a real subtle example, but it's an example of manipulation in the editing room of a scene. You just take a look at what I'm wearing at the beginning of the scene, and then take a look at what I'm wearing.
What else is going to come back to you, Jack?
The nightmares have come back.
Okay! Shock sitting at home. And my wife saying, oh, here comes this episode I did of this show. Greg, what? She said, how did you do that? I said, no, I didn't do that. Let's take one more look at it.
If they can do anything, then why didn't they clean it up and do you burn the same thing before?
Well, it costs money to do it. So there is a limit. The limit is not technological anymore, really. The limit is money. And time. See, time. It's a real bummer. You can manipulate everything, but time. Time's going back. You gotta be on the air. Beam it by satellite from New York. Let's go. They can manipulate time, why? It'd be amazing, but they've gotta get this out. So the problem is, why did they change this? I asked myself this very question. Why would anyone in their right mind?
New ones. Because simply.
This, I have to see this.
Meaningless.
Just for me. I can't believe that anybody actually believes. Okay. Here we go. That's a blue shirt! Mary, have you seen this?
Yes.
The
nightmares have come back.
The nightmares have come back. What can I say? The reason that this was done is this is an example, for those of you that are writers, of rewriting a scene after it's been shot. What actually happened here? Do you have an answer? What actually happened? Shot on two different days, and you think I would put on two different costumes for two different days?
They decided you were too casual, or they decided you were in an office instead of at home.
Ah, who said that? Two different scenes. Two different scenes that were set in the same place, this psychiatrist's office. But a producer wanted to rewrite the first scene with some of the dialogue from the second scene in the first scene. So the editor said, sir, that's a great idea. But he's wearing clothes. Notice that. Producer's not notorious, really. I know what the producer said. I've heard it many times. Huh. If they notice that, they're looking at the wrong thing. Thus, like Superman, I Yeltsin and Gorbachev. There it is. That's a manipulation. That's a gross example, very gross, kind of humorous example, not to me, but of course, I didn't act the scene, that first scene that. It looks as though maybe I did act the first scene that. That is not the way the first scene actually went, because they cut two scenes together to make one scene, which neither of us actors ever play. It is a completely manufactured and manipulate the scene. Now that's a great tool for a producer, director, even an actor, if the actor's in on it. If the actor isn't. And it's a great tool for the writer. It can be a great tool for the writer. Are there any writing students in here, screenwriting students? You can rewrite after shooting. But you have to pay the producer a lot of money. Okay. In this scene, thank you for coming. Is it that bad?
No, I got to go to class.
What? That's right. This is this one. I'm going to ask you to watch this. This is relatively long. This is a scene from 30-something, or two scenes from 30-something, in which I say a line. Your job is to figure out what it is. That I never said. Here was a costume change I had made. And here is a line I never said. See if you can tell. This is a much more subtle example. This is not a gross example. Is it easier to see if we knock these lights on? This is what they call a demo.
Can you hear it?
Well, you know, your mother's had a great calming influence on the administration office. She makes everybody's job a lot easier.
Would you like some iced tea?
Sure.
I'll get you some.
Weaseled my way into it. But at Pudovkin's book, those of you that are interested in film acting at all, Pudovkin was a Soviet Russian filmmaker. And in the 1930s, he wrote a book called Film Acting. And in it, he says that the next leap for film actors, for the quality, high quality film actor, will be for the actor to be admitted into the editing room, for actors to understand the psychological reasons for each shot. Much like the director does. This is not true in Hollywood today at all. It has not happened. Dawkin asked for this to happen, but of course, it didn't happen. And the system as it exists today does not include actors in editing rooms. But actors need to know those things, and I spent a lot of time myself trying to figure them out and learn them from editor friends of mine. The fellow who directed that episode, 30-something, which won an Emmy, was 30-something's number one editor. This was his first directing job. He did a really nice job. And he did let us rehearse, which is another thing you don't do in television. And he let us come into the editing room if we so chose, which was extremely unusual and kind of lost his job. We're all going to fight to change these things, of course, and make much, much better television than films. I don't field any questions anybody has. Anybody have any questions? Yes.
Yes. How much training in the commercial and television movie type acting training should you get before you start films and commercials?
Commercials, I really don't have much to say about. Certainly nothing good. I have done them, and they have helped me get through life. And anybody who needs to survive, you need to make yourself available. Anything that will make you money. But I don't advise commercial training, mostly because most commercial training is done with you looking directly into the camera. And it's the first thing that you learn not to do if you're actually playing scenes for television or movies, is to look directly into the camera. So I feel it makes people too camera conscious in that. But some. You have to have some, or you wind up like me, not knowing what a master is, and being completely thrown by the process. If you know what the process is, it's a disaster, at least it was for me.
Yes, I had a question about film editors. Do they ever read the script? Or is there a script?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes I watch TV, and I don't think there's a script.
Well, there's a script. There's a script here. I may have even brought a script. Yes, they read the scripts like men. The most concerned and interested filmmakers really are the editors. They read the scripts over and over and over. They're the hard workers. Here's one. Every different colored page is another rewrite. We have many, many different colored pages. This is a, what is this? This is a Northern Exposure I did. Many, many rewrites. Considered to be a very well-written show. In my mind, characters are only created in this show in the technique of throwing characteristics upon a naked body. For example, you take a dart and you say, well, give him a hump.
Yeah.
And he'll be a black man. You throw traits on a character and call it something. But people find it quirky. And so it's a top 10 show. And one of the highly rated and highly touted by critics shows, maybe some of you love the show, executive producer is a friend of mine, and all this sort of thing. Don't quote me. It's a boring bunch of nothing. Okay. I very much enjoyed the money that they paid. Here is a script. The editor will have read this more than the director will have. The editor will have read this more than the producers will have. The editor actually cares about the quality of the script. There is a script that changes almost constantly. I have had rewrites given to me after a scene was shot. Picture that. Well, we just did this. You learn real quick, we're going to do it again. Okay, what are they paying? long speeches with little changes in them, those are the worst. It'd be easier to memorize something completely different. Memorize, here and there, a couple of words are different from the speech which I just did. Anyway, we got it done. Yes, okay, so that's a close-up. So what they'll do is they'll have the camera here, and the other actor squeezes, holds them very uncomfortably. You see the camera like this, doing their lines, you see this all the time. And they're trying to get as close to the lens as possible without being in the lens. It breaks the fourth wall. If you look straight through, the suspension of disbelief. So that's the general rule. There are asides, like there are classical plays, where people will address the camera straight on. That's like George Burns in what was that called? George Burns and Gracie Allen's show.
Burns and
Allen. he would do that all. Direct address for the audience.
What does ACE stand for after the
Flying Ace.
It's something like American Cinematographers Emporium or something like that. It's an emporium they go to and they pick the cinematographer. It's a union. It's a union for cinematographers.
You said that there were ADR groups.
Yes.
How does one become a member of
an ADR group? Really tough. People love this job. I'll tell you. Every actor in Hollywood wants to be in an ADR group. One thing, you get paid SAG minimum, which I guess is $4.61 a day at this point. Sometimes it's for a half an hour's work, sometimes it's all day. It's anonymous, so people don't know who you are. So you're the voices and backgrounds of lots and lots of things. Everybody wants this job. And you get residuals. So when they, I just got a check for JFK. Now, all I am in JFK is just a bunch of voices, and at the very end, I'm the guy screaming. Oh, Garrison, Mr. Garrison, one of the reporters. They just need that sort of thing in there, and they pay actors to do it. Why, I don't know. But as long as it lasts, it's a tremendously good rating trend, and everybody wants to get on it. The best thing, in the ER group, there are only about four that are, you get a lot of work, is if you know a foreign language. I'm always looking for people, how fluent are you in Arabic? Hindu, Spanish, Italian, French, German, because those things come along and they're in a German airport and they want to hear, Bill Gates. Bill Gates number 72 is over there. Okay. So, any other questions?
How much computers do you think is in the future will be? How much of acting do you think will be computer generated?
Well, that's a good question. I think that with multimedia, as it exists today, even on home computers, where you can almost now, with video spigot and all these different programs, you can make a movie. I think that the future is oral one. The actors will be using as rotoscope models. I don't think I think it might even signal the rebirth of the live theater in many ways, because people, I think, will hunger to see real people. But computer generation is going to take jobs away from actors, in my opinion. It's hard to see in the future. Maybe a whole explosion for actors, I don't know. But imagine that. The things that the whole history of movies and of stage is to get more and more control over the environment. That's why you have stage, and then you don't have to have open air ones, you can close them in. And you have sound stages, so you don't have helicopters making noise. Well, what could you never control? The people. The actress won't come out of her trailer. Well, the actress will come out of her trailer, and she's computer generated, and you call her up, and you sample. Right now, for example, there is something called a video resume. So you don't just send your picture to a casting director, right? You send a video. They then put it on a machine, which does this. The director says, well, I like her look. Can you let me see what she looks like with glasses? Glasses. With bluer eyes? Oh, like that. Can you age her up maybe a little bit? Can you change the glasses? More Gucci stuff. That's nice. And can you thin her hips a little bit? I would hire her. Who the hell is that? Well, the fact is that maybe it's even a better way to cast, because all they're looking at is the image. And all that's up here is an image. There's almost nothing real about it. So the possibility does exist that they could sample an actress, sample Meryl Streep. We want to lower her voice. They want to change her ears. They do that and have her say the dialogue. There is a computer game now that Lucasfilm has done where it's been praised for the realism of its figures. Well, what they did was they rotoscoped actors, like Disney did in Sleeping Beauty and various things. You all know what rotoscoping is? No, good. Something for you to look up in the library. Rotoscoping is a very interesting technique. It allows animators to get the actual movement of people and the changes of body mass into their animations. But I do see that the future is very wild and wide open for the programmer that knows his thing. It's like Gordon Craig, I think, was the Uber marionette. Was it Gordon Craig? The Uber marionette, and the actor, has something to be manipulated. He's becoming tremendously available to a program who could be a director. And now you make the sets graphically. You make music. Everybody's story is different. Mine is bizarre and peculiar, as most people. And no two people seem to get into this the same way. As I say, I went the straight route, trained for my MFA, spent my 3 years in my body, voice, and all my movement work, and my acting scene work, which is very, very important, and I would be nowhere without it. How did I get the job? I got my first real job in a movie called Car Wash because yes, I admit it. Actually, that's pretty good. Because the guy who was directing the film, Michael Schultz, was having his birthday. At his birthday was my analyst. Who had been his analyst, and my acting teacher, Peter Cass, from New York. Michael was complaining about casting this one part in this movie he was doing at Universal. They both suggested me. He called me on a Sunday to go to a hotel, and I got this phone call on a Sunday morning, and I said, no. He said, I'll audition every day of the week. The hell do I have to audition on this New York attitude? Why the hell do I have to audition on a Sunday? I'm sleeping. I better go to this. I'm going to the Sherry Netherlands Hotel. Never did that before. I thought this guy's going to rape me. I don't know who this guy is. I don't know what's going on. We do a screen test with a little tiny microphone propped up, and he's got a camera. And finally, at the end of it, I said, why did you call me? Why did you call my agent to call me? Why did you call me directly? How'd you know my number? Who are you? And he tells me this thing, well, my birthday the other night. That's why I pay my analyst 10%. I mean, I'm already. It's like ridiculous. So that's how, actually, I got my first film from that and went into a television series for Universal. So it was like, for me, it was extremely easy. But I'm telling you, nobody's story is the same. The only perfect story I know is Meryl Streep, where you just are celebrated all the way from undergraduate school through graduate school. The carpet is rolled out for you, and you walk across it, and that's, you know, great. Basically, she had, you know, my fantasy.
Did you get lots of instructions?
Oh. You remember my first story, don't you? Oh, yes. Oh, hundreds to one acceptance. Absolutely. And it's never very nice. It's never fun. The worst one was, I suppose, when you get close to something. Rejections don't really matter. You know, as it gets more and more important, I was one of five people at the end to play Mozart from Amadeus, Formula Schwarman, which that other film. And that hurt me for about a year and a half. I never did get a job. And I had been working for a long time, 10 years. It can be tough, but you also, you know, you learn about yourself. You know, when you get hurt badly, you find out, well, so I wonder what that's like. You'd be better not to know.
Now, you trained Tish as a stage actor.
Wasn't called that then.
Okay.
Nobody would give Tish and not give any money.
So, but you trained as a stage actor in
yes.
The graduate or undergraduate?
Graduate. My MFA is from NYU.
And then you ended up working on film and TV.
Yes.
Was that your choice, or is that where the money was for the job?
Well, you know, there's not a whole hell of a lot of well-paying theater jobs. I don't feel aware of this. but there are, and Seattle is an exception because there's a lot of theater. But when I first got out of school, I worked at the Seattle Rep in 1977 in the Mousetrap. So you would be hired out of New York, the TCG. And I did a number of regional theater jobs, and I went to the public theater and continued to work in the theater. But I was very happy to be asked to do television and film, because mostly you get to work with some incredibly talented and wonderful people. It's amazing how poorly so much talent can come off, but often it does.
So if you had your choice, would you keep working in film and TV or on stage?
Well, I do have my choice, and I choose not to be down there. I'm a little burned out on television, and I'm burned out on films, and I'd like to get back and do some more stage and teaching. I'm interested in a whole other kind of phase. I did that for 17 years. That's a long time. And none of you know who I am yet, so I'm
going to go the other way. You're bad performance, you do the other and so forth. Look a lot better.
Yes, they have saved many a performance. Again, I won't tell you the rules, but they have saved many performances, although they can't, they'll tell you they can't make a great performance out of a bad one. But the fact is they can make a damn good performance out of a pretty bad one. Yeah, yeah. It takes a lot of work. People don't get hired a lot if they're that bad all the time because it's just too much overtime to the editor and they don't want to pay.
One last question.
Okay. Where and when and what are you planning on teaching?
Well, I'm teaching it at Bellevue Community College right now, and I teach the CAM course. I'm teaching an improvisation course there at Bellevue. And I'm teaching privately at Bellevue. and I'm trying to get a job running the drama department at Shoreline Community College. And Barry, of course, is going to offer me many positions. teaching you all. And I'll probably take them up on. So stay in the school of drama.
Thank you.